My title is slightly changed, but actually the talk is basically almost the same. And right now I'm really like a moving situation, and next semester I move back to Korea, so actually this is almost the last moment in the United States for me. And this is my collaborator is Elio Beskover and Hyunjoo Kim. They are really like take care of the spinach of the beamlines in Brookhaven National Lab. And the sample, the manganite sample, is provided by the grown by the Dr. Kwon. She is right now moving to the California State University, and actually this sample was made in the Bangkok Test Maryland group. And also another sample, the chromium dioxide. I just give some little talk. Then this sample is grown by the Dr. Gupta in the IBM. And he really provided very nice samples. And so my talk is consists of the first I introduce some ferromanganate oxides and some issues, and I briefly describe about the experimental techniques. And because I think the right now this experimental technique is not really common in this society, my feeling, if my feeling is right. And then I discuss about the some result of the manganese perovskite, the lanthanum strontium NO3, and I discuss about hypermetallicity and some observed anomalous surface boundary magnetism. And then the next topic, I just briefly describe about the CRO2 and some X-ray absorption measurements on this system. And then I conclude, and I also describe some future works. Okay, the ferromagnetic oxides, this is a strongly correlated system, and this one shows a very interesting physical phenomena, the magnetic resistance and the metallic transition, hypermetallicity, and also some kind of non-ferromagnetic behaviors, etc. things. And it is alone, the system is not really well described by the first bridge band structure calculations. And the systems, this is first binary system, like a CrO2 and the Fe3O4 magnetite, and the Fe2O3, gamma Fe2O3. And in the perovskite, and it is well known, the manganese perovskite and the cobaltite, and also for the ferromagnetic oxide, the strontium ruthenium oxide, and all others, double layer perovskite, and also right now, people start to study about double perovskite, like iron molybdenum double perovskite, etc. things. And the subject I try to study is the electronic structure and some magnetic properties and ground state symmetries. And the experiment tools are photo emission and spinosaurus photo emission and some X-ray absorption, which include the magnetic circular dichroism and also some polarization dependence measurements. Okay, first, the spinosaurus photo emission, this one should give the information, direct information on the spin dependent electronic structure, and so the photon goes in, then it kicks out the electron, so we collect the electrons, so we can get the information about the occupied stage, and also we can resolve the spinosaurus photo spins. So then we can really get the information about the density of stage for different spins. But the technique is very surface sensitive, so this one has about 5 angstrom probing depth, so sometimes we can also check the surface magnetism. Actually, this is very important for the tunneling magnetic resistance. And the next technique is the X-ray absorption magnetic circular dichroism, and this one gives the information about the magnetic moments, and this one it has about 50 to 100 angstrom platinum depth. So if we compare the squid measurement and the spinosaurus photo emission measurement and this X-ray absorption measurement, then we can have a different length scale magnetizations. And the technique is right now that we use a circular polarized light, so photon has the spin. So if the spin of the photon is parallel or anti-parallel, then the transition matrix element is different. So we can get the magnetic information on that. And another technique, it is just like a normal absorption, X-ray absorption spectroscopy, but we just use the polarized light, the linear polarized light, because the synchrotron light source gives the linear, very nice linear polarized light, so we can apply this polarized light, then we can get the very selective dipole selection rules. So we can easily get the ground state symmetry, as you mentioned yesterday by George. Then this is very sensitive for the ground state. Ground state symmetry. Then, okay, then let's go to the real systems. And this is four emission spectroscopy data. Of the doped manganese perovskite, and this is the lanthanum calcium MnO3 measured below first above the Curie temperature. Curie temperature about 260 Kelvin, and above the Curie temperature, then if you look here is the fan ladder, then the density of state is almost gone, and it shows the more like insulating features. Then if the temperature is cooled down, then the density of state of ferromer it starts to grow up and finally builds up, and finally you can easily see the Fermi cutoff. So here is the spectroscopy only look at the occupied stage. So here is the Fermi cutoff, metallic Fermi cutoff. And here is the almost similar data obtained from the lanthanum strontium and MnO3 epitaxial films. This one is about 360 Kelvin TC. Then if you look at the four emission spectrum, it is almost the same behavior. Then here we monitor the density of state at the ferromer as a function of temperature. So we have a little more details of the function of temperature. Then if you look, then the density of state well below the Curie temperature, then we have a certain amount of density of state ferrum level. Then if we increase the temperature, then it goes down quickly, and at TC, then the density of state almost disappears. So this one shows the density of state ferrum level, really strong temperature dependence, and this ferromagnetic transition is quite associated with the metallic state transition. Then I showed the similar to four emission data. So he asked about what is the half-metallic system. Okay, this is the spin of four emission data measured well below the Curie temperature. The measurement is performed at 40K. And actually this one shows the hysteresis root curve. So this is a magnetization. So apply the field, then it just all the spins is flipped easily. And the coercivity is only like about order of 100 oisted, so it is well like something like a magnetically single domain behavior. Then, okay, this is the spin of four emission data. This line shows the minority spin band, and here is the majority spin band. So if you look at the minority spin band, actually this is oxygen to p band, and it goes down and well below the Fermi level, about like 0.6 or 0.7 maybe below the Fermi level, then that substrate completely disappears. But if you look at the majority spin band, it extends up the Fermi level and it shows the Fermi cutoff. So the majority spin band is the metallic, but the minority spin band is the insulating. So this is half metallic feature. And we also checked what happened above the Curie temperature. So this is above the Curie temperature. So in this stage, there is no majority band or minority band. Only we can say just the up spin band and down spin band. So up spin and down spin band is really like identical. And if we subtract out, then we can only see the statistical errors. Then here, indicates very low temperature, if we subtract the oxygen band, then here approximately shows the manganese 3D, the partial density of state. Then here is the T2G band, shows up, and here the EG band. The EG band goes up to ferrum level and it shows the Fermi cutoff. So typically the charge carrier should be EG electrons, as you well know. So it shows that if the temperature is well below the Curie temperature, then the all spins, all manganese 3D spins are aligned. Then the majority spin band is extended up to the ferrum level, but the minority spin band has a gap. So minority spin band is the insulating features. But if you hit up over the TC, then actually the density of state disappears, but the density of state for the downspin band and upspin band, they become identical, so there is no difference between the two spins. So this is the this one really shows the manganese perovskite is really half metallic, and actually this is the first observation of metallic ferromagnet. Then, as I mentioned before, this technique is very surface sensitive. So a lot of people are technically very interested in what is the surface magnetization, how it behaves, it is like a bulk or it is different, etc. things. So we can monitor the spin and asperity for the T2G and the EG band as a function of temperature. So this is the result of the spin anisotropy as a function of temperature. If you look, then you can easily recognize that it does not look like a normal like a magnetization curve as a function of temperature. It quickly drops, very quickly drops, and it shows you almost like I cannot estimate what the power law, but it's more like a linear-like behavior. Because if anisotropy becomes smaller than the data, it is very difficult to take the anisotropy. It takes very, very long time, so it is scattered. But there is no doubt the magnetization goes very, very quickly, and it is more like a linear-like behavior. Then here are a lot of theorists, so I don't know about the theory, but I just checked the literature and what kind of study is done about the surface magnetization. Then in the case of 3D systems, in the bulk system, in the Heisenberg model, then the magnetization is in the midfield theory is goes down as a power of a half, but in the Monte Carlo simulation shows about one third. No power law. But in the case of surface, it is a semi-infinite Heisenberg model. Then it shows in the mean field, it is a linear behavior and Monte Carlo predictable like a power of 0.8. So it is more like a linear like a behavior. So, and some experimental measurement of a surface magnetization were performed for something like a simple metal, iron, nickel, or gadolinium, such kind of simple metals. Then they also found some kind of linear behaviors near TC. So here, in this measurement, we found out, the surface magnetization is quite different from the bulk. Actually, we don't know exactly what's the reason. If this is just a Hamiltonian or some like reconstruction happens at the surface, we don't know exactly, but the clear fact is the surface magnetization is quite different from the bulk, and this one really affects the tunneling magnetic resistance.
Is it anisotropic? Does it lie in the plane, or does it not?
This is the
magnetization. Does it lie in the plane?
The magnetization is in the plane. And as you mentioned before, we can also monitor the magnetization with the circular dichroism. This is the manganese L2 and L3 edge magnetic circular dichroism X-ray absorption spectroscopy. So as you can see, if the photon spin is parallel or anti-parallel, then you can easily see there is a big difference in the transition matrix element. So if we monitor this anisotropy, also here is an anisotropy as a function of temperature, so we can also get the information about some like a 50 angstrom, about 50 angstrom precession depth magnetization. Then this is a summary we obtained. The magnetization as a function of temperature, I measured by the different techniques. First is this is squid measurement. Then you can easily see this is a very nice magnetization curve, and it drops at TC, such things. And in the case of the MCD spectrum, MCD measurement shows it is more like a bulk behavior, but it is considerably dropped a little bit faster than it drops at the TC. And in the case of surface boundary magnetization, it drops very, very quickly. Then it goes more like linear-like behavior, but this is almost the same for all three measurements. So we found a very anomalous temperature-dependent behavior at the surface boundary magnetic region. We think that this is due to the different magnetic interaction at the surface. Actually, what kind of difference, we don't know exactly, but it must be different. And another thing is, in practical, we can, this information really gives some information about the tunneling magnetic resistance. Okay, this is the data. This dot is the data obtained from this Dr. Jung's group from the polycrystal sample, and this is indicates polycrystal sample. It is something like tunneling through the grain boundaries. So this is the magnetic resistance compared with the something like a partial charge carrier density. Partial charge carrier density is simply just like I just simply the surface magnetization and multiply by the tensor state at the Fermi level. Then this one is theoretically right. I don't know anything about this, and maybe it's wrong. But only thing is, we just compare these two measurements, then it is quite similar behaviors. And one more comment I mention is, here there are surface boundary magnetism shows like this way. Then when I compare the density of state at the Fermi level, the one measurement is obtained from the optical Drude peak measurement, and the one we obtained from the four emission measurement, then if we apply if I scaled by the difference in the magnetization, then actually the density of state, the temperature dependence of density of state is quite well agreed between the four emission measurement and the optical measurement. I don't know if this is a linear scaling is right or not, but actually the experiment obtained is the linearly scaled. The density of state of Fermi level is linearly scaled. Okay, then I'll go on to next topic. This is the chromium dioxide system. Actually, it is well known, and this is some kind of archetype ferromagnetic oxide, and it is really technologically very, very interesting systems. But actually, in my knowledge, actually there are not many experimental data. So this system is also predicted to be a hexmetallic ferromagnet, and it is well agreed in the society. People consider this is a hexmetallic system, not a hexmetallic system. But the physical understanding is very limited. Actually, the major reason is the sample is very difficult to grow, so there are not many experimental data is available. Then the characteristic of CrO2 is first, the crystal structure of CrO2 is a titanium O2 type rutile structures. I'll show later what the structure is. Then this one has the nominal chromium 4+, so this is D2 system. So this is a this also is under the octahedral symmetry, so this is T2G2 under the octahedral symmetry system. So it is another example, as mentioned by the George yesterday. This is a D2 system, so maybe some orbital thing can have some important things. And the Curie temperature is actually the 395 Kelvin we obtained, and this is the spin one system with the magnetic moment is a 2 Bohr magneton. So we can just briefly draw at the cartoon about the electronic structure. Then here is the oxygen to p band, and there is some T2G symmetry, up spin T2G symmetry band is here, and here is another T2G symmetry band here. Maybe this is some kind of Coulomb energy, and there is some metallic features comes on. Then here is the EG up spin, and here is the EG down spin shows, and here is the J value, etc. things. This is just a brief prediction about the electronic structure. Then I show some kind of magnetic result of this CrO2 films. It is grown by the Dr. Gupta in IBM. And this is CrO2 on titanium O2-100 substrate. And this is the magnetization curve, very nice magnetization curve. And this is 393 Kelvin. And more detail, actually I don't want to discuss about more details, but it shows very nice magnetization curve, and the hysteresis is very, very nice. And here is a hysteresis root curve measured at the 5 Kelvin, and the coercivity is very, very small. It is order of about 20 oysters. So all spins are flipped easily. And one more thing is, if you look, here is the field is parallel to the C-axis, or field is parallel to the B-axis, then the hysteresis root curve shows completely different behaviors. So we can easily recognize the spin always try to stay at the C-axis. So each axis is the C-axis. Then, okay, we can also measure the MCD spectrum, and we got a very nice MCD, and we got the MCD spectrums. I don't know actually what I can play with this information. Maybe George's group, they can get more information from this. But, okay, then I'll show some what the structure, rutile structure, and what the coordinate of the oxygen and the chromium, etc. things. First, you can easily see here is the chromium and here is the oxygen. So each chromium has the 6 oxygen neighbors. So it is typical octahedral symmetries. And then the splitting between the EG and the T2G orbitals. Then this, but if you look at the distance between the chromium to oxygen, then there is some kind of apical oxygen here. So this one is a little bit longer than the other oxygen. So this one has some kind of the tetrahedral distortions. Then it splits, so EG band is split G square minus R square and X square minus Y square. And the EG band is also split XY or YG. And the XY orbitals. Then, in this system, I show about the polarization dependent X-ray absorption spectroscopy result. Then I want to little bit change the coordinate because it is much easier for me to understand the X-ray absorption spectroscopy data. Then if I put the Z-axis goes to the always goes to the apical oxygen, then the XY is not towards the oxygen, but XY is equal to the in this direction, or this Y is this direction. Then in this chromium has the X is here and the G is here. And here is X equal here and X G equal here. So in 4-2 chromium, we just switch the X and the G. So like this is 0-0-1 direction, is the EG axis direction, is always Y direction, and this in plane, AB plane is alternated by the X and the G. Then because I showed another data, but I prefer to choose such kind of coordinate. Then one recent theoretical study, the LDA plus U calculation is published in PRL. And this one predictor also half metallic. Then they suggest self-doped double exchange, so oxygen to p stage at the ferrum level. And then if you just look at the symmetry, then they predict the xy is in this is the c axis, so xy is here, xy is completely occupied. Then the yg and the gx, the yg minus gx and the yg plus gx. Is at the ferrum level. So YG plus GX is in the AB plane, and the YG minus GX is some little odd directions. Then if I change the coordinate, like instead of the XYG towards the oxygen, I mentioned the X is somewhere here and Y is always the C axis, then we can get a little bit different coordinates. But anyway, so this is the data, and the polarized X-ray absorption data of the chromium dioxide, and the solid line is the polarization vector is along to the C-axis, and the dotted line shows the result when the polarization vector is perpendicular C-axis. If you look, here is a T2G band, is here, this is your up spin stage, and here this is down and easy up and easy down stage, approximately stage there. But the most interesting place is here. This is T2G up spin band, because this one really contributes to the charge, and it is very important for the also like a magnetism, I believe. Then if you look, there are huge anisotropy in the absorption spectroscopies. And so it means the charge carriers and this unoccupied the T2G band is almost stayed in the AB plane, not the CC axis. Actually the oxygen 1s absorption spectroscopy, this is the transition from the oxygen 1s to the oxygen 2p. So what kind of 3D orbital is hybridized or bonding with the oxygen 2p? So I just checked the bonding between the chromium 3D and the oxygen 2p. Then if I check, the XG orbital always interact with the PX and the PG, which is located in the AB plane. There is no other bonding with the PY. So actually XG always interact, only make a bonding with the PX and PG, which is in the plane. But all other orbitals always interact with the PY, which corresponding to the C axis. So it clearly tells, this data clearly tells the orbital occupation of the CRO2 is the YZ, and the here is X square and Y square. But anyway, if we change the coordinate throughout the oxygen, then this is the PXY orbital. So this orbital is occupied, and this orbital is completely almost unoccupied. We have a very small signals in this absorption spectroscopy. Actually, if I estimate how much it is, this is only 5% of the whole signals. So if we just apply the single site bonding, then if everything is this one is occupied, then this is 100%. But if we consider the all kind of hopping and the charging, then I think 5% is very, very negligible, I think. So mostly occupation is this YG and the hexagamous Y scale orbitals, and this orbital is almost empty state. And also the charge carrier, because this one also gives some kind of charge carrier. We cannot really distinguish which one is the charge carrier, which one is the unoccupied state, but the whole peak is in the plane, so it means also charge carrier is mostly in the plane. Then I don't know how to connect that result and this result. This is the resistivity data, and there is anisotropy. Actually, very low temperature. This is the in plane, and this is the C axis. So I don't know how to interpret it, how to connect these two results. Maybe some theorists can play with that, but I don't know. So conclusion. Okay, we have performed the spin resolved and the X-ray absorption spectroscopy on the hepatotal system, lantern, spin CMNO3, and the CR203 systems. And the result is promised that this electron spectroscopy really provide the direct and the critical information on the magnetic oxide systems. So we observe the hexmetallic ferromagnet, and we also understand the details of magnetic behaviors and also orbital occupations or ground state symmetries, etc. things. So right now we try to extend our study. We did not succeed in the spin resolved for emission of the CRO2 because there's a still surface problem is not solved. I don't know it cannot be solved or whatever it is, but we are still trying to get the spin resolved for emission data. And on another side, we also tried to do a study of strontium silicium oxide systems. We obtained some result about MCD and some other result, and we also trying to do spinosad 4 emission result. And right now we another plan is we really like we got the samples and everything's fine and we got the sample, so we try to do similar kind of study on the lanthanum strontium copper oxide systems, and maybe in future maybe we will try to another inter system is iron molecular propagate systems. Thank you. Yes.
You showed us this very nice data on the surface magnetization.
Yes.
Mentioned and then the other techniques.
Yeah.
And got this, it looks like nice agreement with the expectations near TC, but down at low temperatures.
Yes.
In the T3 Havas region, some years ago, found that in the surface, the coefficient of the T3 Havas term should be larger than that of both by a factor of 2. And it would be exceedingly interesting if you could look at that data
uh-huh.
in low temperature region, if you could resolve the T3 Havas law and compare the surface and bulk.
So, actually, you mean the two T3 half law?
If the bulk is 1 minus B T3 half,
yes.
It should be 1 minus 2 times
T3. You mean the magnetite case?
I would think for ferromagnetite, yeah, for Heisenberg type ferromagnetite.
In the case of, so you mean, in the case, I don't know, and the low temperature. In the case of, okay, CrO2 shows the 3 over 2 T dependence at the low temperature.
So that's the bulk,
huh? Was
that the bulk or
the surface? This is the bulk. This is a squid measurement.
Yeah.
But here, it is, we do not estimate how it behaves, but it is, actually, we do not.
Surface to the bulk would be very interesting.
Yeah, surface to the bulk may be interesting, but.
Before we go to the next question, maybe you can give a little clarification. When you speak about surface polarization,
uh-huh.
is this surface magnetization, integrated uh-huh. magnetic moment, or it's polarized density of states, which is measurements for the emission? What your
right. Okay. This is the area, the yeah, integrated of the spectrum.
That was exactly my question. Okay. George, in the I guess the delta state type of mechanism is the explanation for many of the properties of the magnetite, then you would expect the EG to decrease dramatically as you go up in temperature and you go above the Curie temperature. You have a very wide EG band of order 1.5 micron volts.
Yes.
Did you see it narrowing?
Okay. Here I cannot say that. But actually, I performed the resonance 4 emission, and I got some dense state. Then there is some small narrowing, and there is a shift of the EG band relative to the Fermi level.
You had another spot where you had subtracted
yes. Yes, this one.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would have expected that. So if you did that at a public temperature, I would expect that EG band to actually narrow up.
Yeah, I think so.
Get that double exchange.
Yes, but it is real, like qualitatively, I think it agrees, but quantitatively, I don't know.
Somebody's shaking his head. No, so I would like to know.
The density of states, the density of states, information, and then the states are localized.
Yeah, actually, I saw the actually here in the case of a spinosad 4 emission, if I increase the temperature, then spin anisotropy gets smaller. So then the this one is more noisy, so it is very difficult to extract it. But in the case of resonance 4 emission, the 2p resonance 4 emission, I saw some narrowing if I increase the temperature. And not only narrowing, but also the peak position is slightly shifts. Yeah.
One question. What did you have in mind to stress that lanthanum and strontium magnetite was the first half metallic permanganate. Is known for chromium dioxide for many years already?
Chromium dioxide. Actually, it is always claimed and it is predicted, and people really assume this is half metallic, but actually there's no.
There have been also band calculations.
Manganese is half metallic. Experimentally, it is not really like.
There are also some experimental indications. But not simple like what they mean. Was there a question here? Maybe I can make a small comment because you already spoke one. Are you aware about spin polarization measurements by point contact and wave reflection technique at our lab?
Yes.
Because their results actually disagree with yours, but they agree with band structure calculations of Pickett and Sink.
Yes, I know.
I think there is still some contradiction there. Do you want to ask something?
Well, I'm just confused. I'm not sure if I just. So in CLO2,
yes.
In-plane oxygen is closer than apical oxygen.
In-plane oxygen is slightly closer than the apical oxygen. Yeah, it's a very small difference, but.
YXY is lower than DYZ.
YXY is lower than the.
YZ.
Okay, here, only thing is I consider is the actually I estimated the bonding with the oxygen. This is not just like epic oxygen problem. Also, this square, in-plane square, is a little bit like shrink.
But if it shrinks, XY has to be higher energy.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
We have one more minute. You still want to?
Yes.
In the oxygen KF data, did you think about the possibility that we're actually seeing the real unoccupied oxygen band if it is such a cell doped system? That model. You can see a very sharp.
Yes.
But it would then no longer be a deep character. See, it would be a monster in a deep character with a symmetry which is not mixing with the deep.
It is possible, I think. Here is just oxygen 1s absorption spectroscopy, and one thing I can say is the first thing is the charge carrier is almost in the plane, and another thing is unoccupied D stage. Because the spectrum must show the unoccupied D stage, symmetric stage. So this one is also almost in the plane.
I was just suggesting maybe it's not. Maybe the spectrum is showing the unoccupied oxygen D in the state, which are not mixing with the D, and the D is also.
Yes, but still, like there is an unoccupied D stage is there.
Further up,
yeah. Yes, but anyway, in this specific regions. Then
solve the problem of the
yeah, so
the last caveat to what you were saying is that actually there are several different measures of spin polarizations which are not the same. This your stage has one spin polarization, spin polarized current has different spin polarization because it includes Fermi level, and there are quite a few in your talk, and they shouldn't be just directly compared with each other. Anyway, so thank you.